What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Forever Dog.
I feel like every kind of thriller, crime movie starring a black man, that black man is Denzel Washington.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Pelican Brief and the Bone Collector, but at least in this one, like, Denzel can use his legs. You know what I mean? So.
Right. He got to go inside the bank and like walk around and do
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Like taking a Pelham 1-2-3, you know.
John Travolta. Yeah. I mean, when he has a good, when he has an insane actor to go against, it's a lot of fun to watch Denzel cook. Like when he goes and plays John Travolta and like Pelham, it's just like, oh, these this is completely insane. That was me and Denzel. John Travolta's like, I'm taking this to another level.
So I haven't seen Pelham in so long. The only thing I think of, there's that part where he just like gradually walks across the train tracks and the train goes by him. And I keep like, it was like such an obvious like animated.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or five-star hotels for two-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week we had a very special guest, Hiss Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live.
Like train, but like he walks calmly. It's the crazy. I that's the only thing from the movie I remember.
Yeah, he's got all the mannerisms down. The other thing about these kinds of movies too that's hard to square with is like you are rooting for like the cop, the detective to like solve things, and then also like this movie is interesting. We'll talk about it, but there's something about, you know, like the fact that we've just been inundated with cops as heroes, you know what I mean? And then you rarely have movies that are like, no, like sometimes they're not so great. But it's also Denzel. So.
Well, you reflect on Denzel playing the authority figures like in society, but like he'll either be like problematic or conflicted, or he'll be like completely corrupt. It's just like a very interesting range of the way that he's portrayed police enforcement in his career. Yeah. But it's like, I did really like this movie, but also like I wish that there was more crime thrillers with black protagonists that you like got to like you were really rooting for them, and they also like were able to make it out. Like
right.
I'm thinking about like Widows, right? Like that movie was dope. And then it like kind of fell apart in the third act. And you're like, oh, this became like about something else. But yeah. You're like, oh yeah, this is dope. Like, we got two female black leads
right.
in the film. And then if it's just like, oh no, it's going to be about Colin Firth and like, Colin Farrell and all this other, you know, political
yeah, do you guys root for the criminals usually or the cops? Because I feel like I always kind of want the criminals to get away with it when it's like a robbery or something like
that. Yeah, if it's a movie like this where the point is like, I'm going to do a we open with like, I'm going to do a robbery. I'm like, all right, well, I hope they get out of this.
Right.
This is who I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
I think it all depends on who the people were seeing doing the robbing. Like
exactly.
Robbing are.
How much you like them.
Think of Dark Knight when like the Joker people were like killing each other. I was like, oh yeah, I want to see how this pans out. Cause they just, it's like you do one step and then you get taken out. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. High school movies are crazy.
I feel like I'm always rooting for them to get out because I don't want them to be trapped inside, man.
Yeah, yeah. I recently watched Army of the Dead, and it's a similar film where you like the characters where you're like, oh, I want y'all to live, but like it's a zombie movie.
Okay,
you know, right, exactly. You don't want them to be trapped inside, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Army of the Dead and just fully going past Bray trying to do this transition into the episode. Let's keep talking
I don't know why you're talking about transition. I completely relate. I mean, we've been stuck inside, man.
Yep.
Wow.
It's fucking
no, I'm saying like you want to go see Army of the Dead because we've been in a pandemic and I totally feel you.
So,
I also
Bray,
feel like
I don't
I'm trapped
know
inside,
if
man.
You know this, but Bray does really bad corny transitions into talking about the start of the episode, and so we've just witnessed that
4 or 5 times. Or all right, let's start the show.
Jonathan Raylock, James the Third, Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
Black men can jump.
What's up, folks? This podcast is sponsored by Earnin. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Think about it. Say you're going out for a special date or it's getting hot, y'all. You might need a fresh outfit for brunch or something nice. Or maybe you just want to feel good and take yourself to dinner. Earnin can help you today. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine. Enjoying Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Download Earnin today. That's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Jump Under Podcast when you sign in. It'll help the show out. Jump Under Podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period. See earnin.com/DOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood, Hollywood City.
Would you like some gum? Would you like?
That's the quote?
Some gum. It's the best
even,
quote because
first of all, he doesn't say it like that. But
yes, he does. Yeah,
it's a little bit creepier, more sadistic.
Would you like some gum?
Why is it the best quote?
Because when we first hear it, we hear Denzel asking it, and we're like, "Why is he asking? Would you like some gum?" And then, like 2 scenes later, Clive Owen asks him, and you're like, "Oh, that's where." I don't know. All of the humor in this movie was so like the tonal shifts, like being like now it's gonna be comedic, was so jarring to me every time.
Really, I loved it. I loved because it brought like some levity to some scenes, like when they're talking to the gentleman in the diner and Denzel ad-libbed that line, like, I bet you can get a cab, though. I remember opening night, like, everyone was dying at that line. Like, like the humor actually worked, which is kind of hard for Spike Lee in some
movies. Yeah.
He's like, unbalanced there. But this is, like, the perfect marriage of, like, an action crime thriller with, like, a lot of humor interjected.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, for those of you who are perhaps listening to us for the first time, just so you know, this voice that you're listening to right now is kind of like the lead voice of the podcast. You know, I'll be breaking it down for you. You know, we'll have some laughs, we'll have some fun, but you'll feel safe and secure. And that voice is Jonathan Braylock.
All right. And you may notice Gerard Milligan's voice is not here. But this voice, you know, that's just trying to, have a good time. Just going to kind of be like in this sort of general octave for the next 2 hours. It's James III.
And we have a special guest on the podcast today. You
I'm
going to
do the drums. Hold on. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Let me do the drums.
Okay. You may know him from the podcast he co-hosts, Medium Popcorn. Give it up for Brandon Collins, everyone.
Yo, thank you for having me, man. This is going to be fun.
Dude, this is going to be awesome. Brandon brought us an incredible movie to discuss today. We are going to talk about the 2006 Spike Lee joint, Inside Man, starring Denzel Washington, Clive Owen, Jodie Foster, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Christopher Plummer, William Dafoe. I mean, this
the
movie
cast is stacked.
Stacked cast.
So, Daryl Chill Mitchell. They got everybody in this.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like this movie breaks the thing. Gerard's like, well, if they have someone that famous, they're going to be like blah, blah, blah. But William Dafoe is pretty famous and he's just the captain.
I read like some trivia where like apparently Spike Lee and William Dafoe met in like a bathroom at like a Julius Caesar when Denzel was on Broadway, and Spike Lee was like, we should work together, and Willem's like, yeah, we should, and then he sent him the script for Inside Man. That's how that went. Like,
he's like, you can play this part.
But that's Spike Lee though. Like, I think he's
exactly, that's true,
you know, achieved that kind of level of respect where if he's like, hey, I would like to work with you on this, you can be like, yeah, like let's do
yeah,
this
yeah, tomorrow whatever.
Just, I literally have a script right
want.
Now
right.
We cast this other actor, but like, whatever, do you want to do this?
I feel like every other movie he does is like borderline a classic. So it's like, as an actor, like I can roll the dice with that.
Right. Well, I remember at the time this was Spike Lee's biggest budget film. It cost $45 million to make. And it also was, I think, his highest grossing film. And it made $186 million worldwide. $88 million domestic, $97 million international, which is a huge deal.
They finally did the sequel, right? Like they had been. I don't think he had anything to do with it. But
no one had anything to do with it. It's
wait, what?
But isn't it? But there is a sequel to Inside Man. Finally, right? But it's none of these. It's not. But they've been talking about a sequel since 2006 because it did so well.
Yeah, I'm surprised it never came to fruition. It's probably because everyone wanted a bigger budget because it was a hit. I mean, a bigger, you know, salary and stuff like that. So
right,
the sequel is it's related by name, but I don't think it's a. You know, in relation to any of the characters we saw in this
right. Movie. Oh, Inside Man Most Wanted is what it's called.
Yeah, it's weird.
That sounds awful. I wish I didn't. I wish I didn't know that, honestly. I'm just gonna be real with you.
Like, it doesn't exist at this point.
I would rather not have that information.
It came out.
In fact, let's strike that from the record.
Nope, it's on the record. It's on the record.
Yeah, I think this is still Spike's biggest box office gross.
Even after Black Panther?
Wait, what? Black Panther?
No,
oh, Black Klansman. It made Black Klansman only made $93
million. Oh, damn. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it didn't do nearly as well internationally.
People wasn't trying to see Black Klansman. Black Klansman.
Yeah, not
Black Klansman
like
came
that.
Out and everybody was like, ah.
Who knows? I mean, and then the Five Bloods, you know, is a Netflix film, so it doesn't have a box office. But this movie has an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, 85% audience score. That's probably, I feel like the audience score and tomato meter are usually never that close, but this is pretty on point. And I think about the right rating.
Yeah.
Rating. But yeah, let's break it down. This film is about a bank robbery. Somebody's trying to rob a bank. Denzel Washington is the lead detective slash negotiator because it's a hostage situation. Clive Owen's the bank robber. And then there's some other players. But why don't we do initial thoughts? Brandon, you want to start? Like, what was your...
Yeah, I mean, thoughts? I remember seeing this opening night in 2006 and not knowing anything about it. I just knew Denzel was in this dope-looking movie with that Spike Lee director, right? And I remember the opening credits with the Jachinga Chinga song. I was like, I looked around, I'm like, am I in the right theater? Like, what's... Oh, no. What's... Did I make a mistake? And then they get into it. And from that moment, like, nothing was... predictable for me. Like, I was just like enjoying the ride from start to finish. I feel like the movie had like maybe four endings. It felt like Lord of the Rings ish towards the end, but I still it's Denzel, so like
a lot
it's
of loose ends to tie up.
Yeah, but the entire movie I'm just like, man, like Denzel has no business being this damn good. Like, I was up, and he's playing against like A players, right? Like Chiwetel and Willem and Clive Owen and Jodie Foster and Christopher Plummer. I'm like, this is so good. Like, this is all the formulas of people that have been in good thrillers before that know what they're doing. And Spike Lee is just on the top of his game in regards to cinematography, the editing, the way that he made the story flow. Because even with the different interrogation scenes and like the multiple endings, it all made sense. It wasn't, there didn't feel like there was a wasted frame. And that's what I really, really like about this movie.
I can go next. I completely agree. I mean, I definitely saw this movie in theaters. I think I knew it was about a bank robbery when I went to see it. And I knew it was kind of like, I knew it was a big deal for Spike because it was like, all right, like I remember it was a kind of, it was talked about like, this is Spike's biggest budget. Like, he's finally making like a mainstream film, you know? And Denzel's going to be in it. And Clive Owen was hot. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but Clive Owen had a moment in the...
Oh, yeah. When he was an officer? Yeah, I remember. Everybody talked about his brother.
Yeah. Like, he had a bunch of different... I think Children of Men came out after this. But, like, this was one of those... This was one of those Clive Owen films where it's like, everyone was like, oh, I remember in college, like, so many girls in my year were like, you know, if you were like, who's the hottest person alive? They'd be like Clive Owen. had that deep, deep voice, British.
Would you like some gum? Would you?
That's not quite.
That's him. That's how he's.
Quite my temple, James.
but yeah, I remember being, you know, so enthralled by this. It's like a fun bank robbery movie where you're not quite sure what's happening. You know that something's up. And then the way, I mean, just rewatching it now definitely holds up. And I just feel like, yes, Denzel is awesome, but Spike really like created this like great film. I don't know. Like, the directing was amazing.
Yeah, he was dope.
And like, it really captures the vibe of New York. Like, I liked the humor moments. Like, I liked the like, you know, supporting cast, like the way that they did the interviews was such a cool device because it allowed like Spike to do a little bit of his thing while like breaking the like conventional storytelling. So you're like, okay, obviously this gets resolved in some way, but they don't know who did it. And they're questioning all these people.
Yep.
And yeah, it's rare that like you have a movie like this where somebody has like a mastermind plan and that plan feels like it actually makes sense and it's not like completely up to random chance. You know what I mean? So the writing was really great. Yeah, I feel like everything about this movie is like enjoyable. It's not, there's no deeper meaning, but you don't need that. This was like such a great like blockbuster film. And if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth the watch. It's like, yeah. So that's me.
Yeah, I mean, this movie's great, obviously. I can't remember if I saw it in theaters. I don't think I did, but I've seen it so many times. It was great to be able to go back and watch it again because it had been a while since I had seen it. But there's so many really great moments in it. I think the directing is fantastic. I like... was waiting for certain things to happen. Like when the guy doesn't have his phone... And I was like, oh, that's right. He's going to call his phone. And it's some like embarrassing ringtone, you know,
yes.
Like, you know, things throughout it that like moments that I like couldn't wait to see, like when the guy takes off his mask and then he gets dragged and he's like grabbing people, like how he really goes into that moment is like so funny.
And I still didn't fully track it, but that the guy who got dragged, he was one of the
he
robbers.
Was one of the
he
bank
was
robbers.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, so genius.
Yeah,
it confused me. Like for a second, I was like, wait, was he a good? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah. And I think this was my first time tracking as I'm right. watching like how they were able to sort of set those things up. And I have seen this movie a bunch of times, and I'm typically thrown every time. I'm like, wait, who is one of them? You know, like the only obvious, the most obvious moment for me, even though that one is super obvious. But the most obvious moment is just the part where the woman when they take the gun from her and then put her in as if she's a hostage.
Right. And they show that.
They
to
show
you.
That. Right.
Yeah. so that you know that's what's happening. Yeah.
I think this movie is really great. The thing that I think I'm going to harp on this whole time is, what did Jodie Foster do, though? Because because on this
great
watch,
question.
I was just like, what the hell is her role? And like, what?
She was supposed to be like the like in between negotiator, right?
She's the fixer somehow. Like she's supposed to. It seems like her job.
Didn't fix squat.
She didn't fix anything. But it seemed like her job was to keep everything a secret, right? That was she was like, okay, I just 100%. Have to make sure that it stays a secret.
I think this fixed. For me, it was like I never thought that Jodie Foster is like, you know, one of the like upper echelon attractive actresses. I always thought she was a really good actress. And then this movie, when she had those suits on, I was like, oh, okay.
Okay, right, with Jodie. The suit?
Well, everyone had suits on. Like, I was like, oh, everybody looked good. Except Clive Owen, because he probably stinks to high heaven being in that bunker for a few days.
Even, so like, yeah, the beginning of this movie is him being, it's just like Clive Owen directly to camera, like, you know, listen to what I say very my name is this whatever, I don't even remember his name, and he won't tell me it again because he never repeats things. Listen very carefully, I've already told you my name.
He did repeat would you like some gum though. He said that twice.
Oh.
I mean,
he was playing mind games.
Oh yeah. I mean, he told Denzel straight up, he's like, I'm gonna walk out this door. He's like, how are you going to get out of here?
And he told
like,
Jodie Foster that too.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm going to walk out of here. Like, it's going to be no problem.
I love that he told both of them and neither of them were like, what? What does that mean? Like, well, I think
thought
they
that
all
it
thought
meant,
that they all yeah. thought that, and it was true for the three other robbers that, mm-hmm. you know, they all came out of that door and they couldn't identify it. But I think Denzel kind of knew that the main guy wasn't there, but it was hard for him to. It was like, how do you prove it?
Because that wasn't the biggest target at the end, too. Like, the biggest target ended up being Christopher Plummer's character when he found out about the safety deposit box and, like, the history behind that. And that's where I was like, this is dope. Because it's like, the robber, like, is doing, like, the shitty stuff, like, you know, terrorizing people and traumatizing them for the most part. But then he's also, like, follow the ring so you can, like, take down this Nazi, you know...
That's the only bit of information we never got was how he... knew, but it's like kind of doesn't matter, but it's like how, but we never find out how he knew, right
but there was like in the ring holder there was like info, you know, like I guess maybe where the ring box came from or whatever, you know, and like maybe we can just imagine that he like is started putting together
oh
some
wait
of the
a
pieces.
Minute I'm sorry, they do explain it, it's very subtle. Because also this film is called Inside Man. I can't believe I just realized this. This film is called Inside Man. Yep. And then I'm like, well, who's the inside man? And it's the Jewish banker who's the rabbi, who's the guy that they're like, if rabbi, you have to listen to. And he throws him down. But that's the guy who works at the bank. And he must have found out about Christopher Plummer and what was in that safety deposit box.
Oh, he was the inside man.
He was the inside man. We see him in the car at the end.
Yeah, in the car at the end.
But the inside man, it's all kinds of, it means all kinds of shit. He stayed in the bank for a week. It's like, it's levels on top of levels on top of levels with the inside man.
Whoa, that just blew my mind. I literally was like, wait, they never explained that. And I realized, oh my God, that they didn't like explicitly say it, but that's the answer. It's there.
But
it's right there.
He's the inside man.
He's the inside man. That's how he found out. Wow.
We cracked the code, Spike.
Is Clive Owen supposed to be Jewish in this movie?
His last name is Russell, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with maybe.
Yeah, I feel like maybe is the answer, because he had some pretty hefty righteous indignation about. I mean, like, it's a pretty bad thing, obviously, to like get all this blood money from Nazis, but it's like, he's like, no, I can't live with this on my conscience. It's like, dude, you...
Christopher Plummer also is very blatant about like, yeah, I had these really close friends and then I turned them over to the Nazis and I stole their fortune, but you know what? You know, I'm a better person now. I open a bank. It's like, what?
That was a long time ago.
It's so... how complicated it is, like, him holding on to all of this stuff. Like, he's like... kept all of their jewels, right? He kept their personal belongings, and he kept whatever paraphernalia connected him directly to the Nazis, and he put it all in one safety deposit.
Yo, family doesn't, he doesn't give a fuck. Christopher Plummer's character, he doesn't care about family, he doesn't care about people's safety. That's why, if y'all peep this, you pay close attention, you realize that this is a prequel to Knives Out. Christopher Plummer here, he just went from bacon to books, Brandon, right?
Yes. You're right.
Absolutely.
I
had
seen it before. Oh,
think about it. Stay
there. We go. We got hot takes, everyone. No, but yeah, the beginning of this was fun. I love the pacing of this movie, because first we see Clive Owen. And we see him for a while, because we see this whole, the bank robbery start before we see Denzel, right?
Yeah. Which is so crazy, because no one noticed that Clive Owen was just walking into this bank and putting
lights. Here's the thing. I'll be honest. In New York, it's like, you notice it, but you kind of are just like, I don't know. What am I going to do? Am I going to say something? No, I'm not going to say it. I might clock you, but I'm not going to say anything until you start doing something weird. Like, the security guard, like, sees him come in with the paint, and he could have been like walked over to somebody else and been like, is there a paint scheduled today? Well, who's this guy? But like, he's like, well, he's not hurting anybody. You know what I mean? Coming in with some flashlights. And then, but then when all the other painters came in, he's like, whoa, what's going on? And then by that time it was too late. But yeah, it's such an interesting, the infrared light bulbs taking out the, cameras.
And if you walk in like you belong there, you know, then dude, 9 times out of 10 you are not gonna get stopped. Like,
it takes so much for people to like stop you. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely done that, where I've like walked into buildings with security guards, and even been like, hello, and then just like keep walking. Like, if you look like you don't know what you're doing, they will definitely stop you.
Yeah.
If you just confidently walk to the elevator, they're like, I don't know, I guess he knows where
he's going. He knows he belongs here. Like, even at the end when he's leaving, there's that woman that passes him on the stairs, and it's just like, I know I don't know this guy. Who is he? Why is he in here? Whatever. And then she just keeps walking. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, all he had to do was walk like he belonged there, which 100%. Is wild.
Yeah, I mean, this movie was it played like a lot of different, it wasn't unfamiliar. Like, there's a lot of like things that Spike Lee puts in, like, you know, techniques and storytelling that he's done in previous movies, but it just felt, and it still feels pretty fresh compared to like even his filmography after Inside Man.
Oh, yes.
I think for me, what impressed me the most, especially when I first saw it, was this came right after She Hate Me. And I don't know if either one of you saw She Hate Me.
No, I didn't see it.
But it was cuckoo bananas, even though like it introduced me to the one that says Kerry Washington. But I was just really like, Spike, what were you on when you did this, bro? And then so when I was telling people about Inside Man, they're like, are you sure? Like, didn't he just have this really bad bomb? I was like, it's going to be fine. Denzel's in it.
Oh, and interesting.
I was right.
Yeah.
When did
Anthony Mackie in that too?
Anthony Mackie is in that.
Because he's had some interview where he was like, I've been in two Spike Lee movies and they're the ones you haven't seen.
That's incredible. Well, remember, Kerry Washington was in Save the Last Dance, too.
She was, yes.
She was. She was the sister. Was.
Yeah, but no, this movie still has some really awesome shots. I mean, like, I think we can jump around because we've already ruined the movie.
Moral alert, everybody.
You got to know that. You don't have to. You could be listening to the first time, like we said, and then we didn't tell you that this is a spoiler podcast. We talk about everything. But even watching it again, I was like, nah, this is still, it's fun to figure out the information as it goes. But he has some classic shot. He had the, well, I mean, it is a Spike Lee shot, but it worked really well, the positioning of it when like the guy gets shot.
And it's,
called? It's not.
It's a tracking shot, right?
Tracking shot, right? Yeah. That's what I want to call it, okay. But I'm like, is that what it is?
But there's something else that's happening too. Yeah, it's like tracking as well as, I mean, and like the footage around them is being sped up. You know? Yeah,
that was that, great. My was mom great. Was like, then, "That's in every Spike." I at the time when I saw this, my mom was like, "That's in every Spike Lee movie." And I, however many I had seen at the time, didn't have the understanding that that was something that I would see in every Spike Lee movie. And I was like, "Oh shit, okay." Like that was when I learned that that was in every Spike Lee movie.
Right? It's like signature shot, but it worked really well for that moment. It makes a lot of sense. Cinematically, and also I feel like the shot that was newer and to me one of the most impressive shots was that guy being dragged out, you know, from you know, when he like has his mask off and then he gets dragged out. Wasn't Clive Owen hiding in there as well? Was he the, or did he just come in and start dragging the guy out?
I think he just came in and dragged the dude.
Okay.
Because he did that. I mean, he didn't drag him, but like the guy with the cell phone. Love that shot because you see him go through the bag, pulling out the cell phones, and then he's like, he finds the dude's phone. He's just like, it's okay, it's okay. And he goes into the office by himself, and you see him through the window where he's like talking to himself and like working it out. Right. And he just comes in and beats the shit out of him. I'm like, dude, that's, for me, that's dark humor. Like, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It comes right after the guy's cell phone is Gold Digger. Like, that was so funny. Like, that whole sequence was hilarious, but it's also like, we know this dude's about to get actually beat up. So it's like, there is a lot of darkness to it, but we see his full body language. Like, he's gesturing and he's really trying to work through it, like, physically.
Right. Also, I loved even before, like, that first cop, when somebody's walking by, they're like, hey, officer, I don't know, there's like smoke coming out of there, and like the guy like walks over and then he has a gun stuck in his face, you know. And then like later on we see him and he's like, you know, using racial slurs, and Denzel's like, hey, mind just not using this colorful language? And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, I'd rather be a bigot than like, you know, get shot. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, but Spike Lee redeemed him by him saying that thing about like, you never know who's listening or whatever. And that's what Denzel's like,
right?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he did also apologize. He was like, oh, sorry for that. But I just thought it was so funny because like, there were 100% cops who saw this movie when that guy was like, I'd rather be a bigot than get shot. They were like, exactly. And I was like, yeah, but you did get shot and you were a bigot. So what do you mean? Like, in this story you're telling, you got shot.
You got shot because you were a bigot.
Like, what? It's not, you being a bigot didn't prevent you from getting shot.
You know, everybody got their own version of revisionist history. You know what I mean? Everybody, you know.
But I loved all those like New Yorker moments. Like, I loved them, they hearing the radio and trying to figure out the language of who's talking. And
yeah, that was great. Does anyone know what the language is?
He's like, yeah, I do. Yeah, it's Albanian. Nah, it's Albanian. All right, come here. Okay. Well, so what's he say?
He's like, I don't know.
I don't know. You told me you speak Albanian. I didn't tell you I spoke Albanian. You also said you speak. I didn't say I speak Albanian. I said I know it's Albanian.
That Italian dude, I think, has been in every Spike Lee movie, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Except for Black Klansman. I think he's been in every one because that dude has like such a unique New York Italian flavor. Like he was in 25th Hour. He was in She Hate Me. Obviously, this movie. He's been in a bunch of Spike Lee movies.
Well, what was great about it, so I wonder if this is connected to something, but there's the when he's like, I don't speak it. And they're like, okay, fine. Just wait over here. He goes, ah, not again. Not again? When did this happen to you
before? That was a great lie. Because it's like, wait, what? And then they just kept it moving. And you're like, okay.
This and then force him to call his ex. Yeah. She comes in with all these parking
when
tickets.
That was so great. Parking tickets, you can fix them. And then she hears it and knows what it is, but before she says anything, she's like, the parking tickets though? Yep. Like she knows she's about to give them not good information. but you took care of my tickets, so all right, yeah, they're done. All right, cool. Yeah, that's the president. Y'all got fooled.
Upon listening to it again, I can't remember if I was fooled the first time watching it, but rewatching this movie, I was like, it's so clearly like a speaker. Like it's so clearly like a radio broadcast. Like it's the way that it sounds, it's like that's not somebody. That sounds like the radio, you know.
I imagine the pressure though, like when you're trying, like, you know, it's this all takes place in a day, except for like the endings and stuff. So you're like under the pressure of like, we need to try to save these people that are inside with these bank robbers. So they're probably not thinking like, this sounds a little bit like a speech, given even though all those people are in the truck listening to it.
It's also distorted too. Like it's not coming in clearly. Right. Like there's static that kind of interrupts it.
It's playing off an iPod, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
As much as we love them, the sound quality still wasn't great yet.
Yeah. Right. There was another, when they're trying to figure out the riddle that he like gave them, like that whole conversation between all those different cops was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And then like Will Defoe afterwards was still like, yeah, the Metro North goes through. Yeah, right.
Still trying to figure out the riddle.
He's like, nah, he's wrong. He's like, nah, it doesn't make, no, he didn't say stop at, he said go through, so technically it's still coming through, so it's not
nothing
the same.
Nothing passes through, everything stops. Nothing passes.
And Denzel,
but the Metro North
passes through. It's like, it's literally, he already gave us more time. What are you doing?
Yeah, I love when Denzel called though the first time, and he's like, "Hold on," and then he hung up. And then she was like, "It weighs nothing," you know, the same or something. And then Denzel's like, "Okay," and then he calls back, and Clavo was just like, "Yeah," like
he was gonna say yes no matter what. Yeah. He didn't care. if he said the train, if he said the paper, they would have been like, yeah. All right, you got 2 hours.
I love the robbers' plan where they were just cycling in and out with the people that they had dressed
so smart.
Them because they were also like, they would have these little interactions with each of them where it'd be like, oh yeah, he wasn't in on it because they were yelling at him. Like, you know, as
100%.
A
yeah.
And moving them around, they completely disoriented, putting masks and stuff on them, like traumatizing them, completely disorienting them. And making it so it really would have been impossible for anybody to get like an actual ID because it was like, I didn't remember every single person in the bank. And they kind of knew that even though it never was really talked about, it's like, yeah, it makes sense that somebody at the bank would be in on this, you know? So it's like, just because you worked at the bank doesn't mean anything either, you know? Yeah, that plan in and of itself was awesome. It's like the only person who you could rule out was the kid. And his dad.
Yeah, who they didn't give, they didn't have anything for, they didn't have a jumpsuit for him. You know, they didn't even have anything.
Right.
The kid's just walking around like in his.
Eating pizza in a safe and shit, surrounded by money. Played a video game.
Wait, this kid scene in the safe was great. I loved that scene so much.
The video game,
Kill That Nigga is one of the game says, kill that nigga.
And then Clive Owen's like, I'm going to talk to your dad about this game. Like, imagine a bank robber was like, sit down with you. He's like,
yes.
Hey, you can't let your son play this game.
That was when Grand Theft Auto was super popular and people were like, dude, what? This game where you steal cars and beat hookers.
Also, like, though, the amount of respect this little boy had for the robber, like, it was too much.
So you getting the money, son?
You trying to get paid too? Put his arms all out. It was real. Yeah, though.
Oh my god!
Actually, I wonder if the sequel is that kid.
Oh shit!
You know what I mean? Like, what if it's the kid character just older? I can see.
And he's and but what is he? Is he a robber or is he?
You know, he's a police officer. You know, they made him a robber. He's a young black man in there.
Honestly, I would watch that. I would watch if you told me right now that Inside Man Most Wanted was about that kid grown up and he's now the robber, I would watch it.
I was a bit disappointed that there was no black people in the crew. Like, you know what I mean? Because it's like.
It's that's like they true.
All, they all got traumatized, some of them. And then also, like, you know what happens to black and brown people if they're late for work? They get fired. So, like, imagine being caught up in a bank for a day and a half or so. Some of them people lost their jobs because of this robbery. And right. They ain't money. Like, that's not right.
But is that why? Like, I was racking my brain as to why they would separate the kid from his dad. And, like, was that to throw people off and think that maybe, you know what I mean? Like, maybe there was a black man on the crew because sometimes we saw him with a kid and sometimes we did. You know what I mean? Like, right. What even was the point of bringing the kid into the safe?
I mean, I think that makes sense because that's why they're interrogating. Like, even though, like, you know, they're just talking to the kid, but they are, like, asking the dad, like, a lot of questions, too. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it was just separate so that that kid was so that you couldn't also rule out the dad.
Right. You know? Right. Mm-hmm.
And also it was like this kid doesn't need to be a part of these scare tactics because we don't need him disoriented. Right,
yeah. We don't need to. This will literally traumatize this kid.
Even though he was good to go. Like when they were going around taking electronics, he was like, Mister. And he holds out his like PlayStation Vista or whatever that was. And he's like, keep it, kid. I'm like, okay. Everyone would be like, well, he clearly
beat down Peter Hammond. Dude, that was amazing. Also, that guy, such a good actor, both the actor and the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like crying, like, I left it at home. He's like, okay. And then he starts taking out the cell phones. And I already knew this, obviously, but like I was watching with Tessa and she was like, what is he doing? And I was like, he's looking through the contacts. And she was like, for what? And then literally as she said, for what? He like has a cell phone and it goes down to like P. Hammond.
Yep.
And I looked at her and she was like, okay. Dude, that part is, I love, and then I love that he goes, is anyone else in here think they're smarter than me?
And that's what I love too about the dialogue. Like we talked a little bit about the script, but like the scene when Jodie Foster and Denzel are talking after she kind of tries to convince Clive Owen to turn himself over and stuff. When they come right. Across him, he's like, he's smart, isn't he? She's like, he thinks he's smart. It's like, yeah, right. But that's the thing. You speak the same language. I love that scene because this is two A-caliber actors going head to head. It's like right. They're kind of on the same team, but not really because she doesn't really respect his position. So I was just like, man, I love the dynamics in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what did you guys think of the Jodie Foster storyline? Because it was like, she is this fixer. She's eventually, we learn, about to sell some house to
Bin Laden's nephew or something.
Bin Laden's nephew, which is like, wait, what is your job title? Like, what?
I was very confused by that too. I was like, is she a realtor or is she associated with everybody? Because in reality, she didn't really fix this. Like, Clive Owen got away
with it. She didn't fix squat.
Yeah.
She didn't fulfill anything. She screwed the mayor. She screwed Christopher Plummer's character. She screwed herself. Like, and she tried to screw Denzel, and Denzel still screwed her. I mean, like,
yeah. I mean, it was sort of like taking this job. It's sort of on her. Like she has this rule of like, you got to tell me what I'm doing, you know. And if I find out that it's something else, then it's a problem for you. And like, she allowed. To be like, okay, if the point of it is for it to stay a secret, then fine, I'll still do it. But when she was in the bank, I feel like when she was in the bank and Clive Owen was like, yeah, this dude's a freaking Nazi, she was like, oh, fuck. Like, I feel like internally she was like, why did I do this?
Right.
Well, are they trying to say that that's why she like kind of did the wheel turn she did at the end? Because remember when she's first talking to Christopher Plummer, isn't she like, if I find out that like actually you're, you know, there's like nuclear codes or whatever, then right. like negotiate this, like this deal is off or whatever. I think maybe what she
said, it won't hurt anyone else. It yeah. won't hurt anyone else, just me. And she was like, okay, I think she still agreed to it. And then even when she found out, she went back to him and like confronted him and said like, and told him what she knew.
Yeah.
And then he was like, can I rely on you to keep a secret? He's like, yeah. And I also took care of the cops, so we're fine. And she took a paycheck.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think that paycheck was probably like 3 times her rate to just pay her off and like tell her like, right. hey, I get that like you found out. So
right.
shut up with this 2-something million.
But then the cop found out anyway, and they couldn't do anything to Denzel because Denzel had blackmail on them.
And first class. So I'm making first class. Boom, boom,
yeah.
boom, boom.
Dude, this script
I do
is
love
tight.
That scene. I do love this the first scene with Jodie Foster and the mayor when when she goes to him and they're just like, oh hey, like how are you? Like, oh my god, how are your kids? Blah, 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 blah. What the fuck do you want?
Yeah, after the door closed.
I love that. It's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about this benefit for the door closes with what do you want?
But I mean, everyone treated Jodie Foster like that. And that's why I was like, oh, this is just this is what her character is like kind of known for, is being like that thorn in your side, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Know, when she shows up, you're like, something horrible is going on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. She has dirt on other people. Clearly. Yeah.
Everyone had an angle. And that's also like kind of like the play on Inside Man. Everyone like had their own, you know, objectives and motives for like how they want this pan out. Cause remember Denzel has that whole investigation over his head, like with the right. cash checking place. And so everyone's trying to use that as blackmail, but he, like, personally knows he didn't do it. So he's like, y'all can keep throwing this at me, but I didn't do anything. So let's just keep yeah. him moving on that one.
Right. Yeah.
But I saw some Denzel's flag just oozing through the screen. He also looked great too. He was like in really good shape. He had the shaved head. Like Denzel was just like, this was like prime Denzel.
Yeah, honestly. This, yeah. Yeah. This was a really good time for Denzel.
Yeah, because he did Flight afterwards and then, you know, started looking a little frumpy. And I was like, Denzel, but I know the role calls for it, but no. What are you doing? But it's okay. He's an older man now.
Yeah, he's a distinguished yeah. gentleman now.
Also, like, Chiwetel didn't have a lot to do, but still was really fun as the partner, you know.
Oh, I think absolutely. This is the first movie I noticed him because, like you said, this is before Children of Men, right? So I think that this is mm-hmm. the
yep.
this is a movie where I'm like, oh, I kind of like this guy, because initially I also was thinking like Don Cheadle could have been in that role, because I know mm-hmm. Don Cheadle and Denzel have really good chemistry. But I was like, oh, I had this new dude Chiwetel, and I heard about him with Kinky Boots and stuff. And then
right. When did Four Brothers come out? That came out the year before.
Jesus,
he was the bad guy in the Four Brothers. Johnson.
When did Love Actually come out? Because that's what I know him from.
That's true. That came out. Right. I think even earlier than that. I think.
But Love Actually I didn't clock him in Love Actually though. We weren't supposed to. He wasn't supposed.
No,
to
be- I mean, he was just getting, you know, cuckolded. No,
that's the sequel, Jonathan. That's the sequel. Love Actually, but cheating. Yes,
with Rick from Walking Dead.
Yep. Yep.
Took me so long to know that was the same person. I was like,
yeah.
Wait, what?
Well, yeah, it's so weird. Andrew Lincoln literally did like 2 movies that people saw, and then he was just in Walking Dead. So that's all people know him for.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, that's no wonder he wanted to leave. I'm sure he was like, God damn it, like I'm an actor, but everyone just keeps talking to me about zombies.
Nah, he got to do some shit on Walking Dead, though.
I know, that was a great role.
Did he bite off a dude's neck who was like about to, you know, sexually?
I know, he did a lot of things. He killed his best friend.
Listen, I season 7, I was like, I can't.
Oh yeah, because at the end he's covered in blood. He's like, this isn't a democracy anymore. I was like, oh god damn.
When that, yeah, it went off the rails for me.
When did it go off the rails for you?
I mean, I wanted to stop watching after season 3, and then I started watching it again. And then
what? Season 3? Season 3 was good.
The governor and shit, I was like, this is too much. This is too...
That's the best. That's when it started. The first season was good, but it was short. The second season was like, ugh. It got stuck on that farm. It was boring. Yep. Then season three is when it started getting good.
Well, the farm was season great. Seven, right?
The prison was season three, right? With the governor and everything?
The prison is season three. That's when it got too much because it got so like...
come on.
It got so... I don't know. It just got so... It got way more like psychological, Michonne? Like the people, James, like what's going on with the people. Michonne was great. I mean, I was. It was great to see her, but...
Because you love Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I can't take this off. I'm sorry. I know this is your show.
I will never say that Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is good. I understand when things are good. I understand when things are good and I understand when I like them. There's a difference.
All right.
We digress.
It was once my boy Steve Young died, I did start to go, okay.
Yeah, I stopped.
I can't take this.
I watched
that
episode
anymore.
And then I stopped.
If you're just gonna just keep killing all the people that I care about, I'm not gonna care about new people. I'm just gonna stop watching the show because they're all dead and I don't care anymore. Like, you can't replace the entire cast with other people. Then at a certain point, it's like, well, what is this for? It's just an endless wrath. Just people just dying and dying.
And also with Game of Thrones, it's like, I've already been through this. I don't need to.
Right. That's so real.
My trauma.
That's another thing about Game of Thrones that was hard. Outside of it being rushed and the books not being finished, it was like, at a certain point, it was like, well, then everybody you care about is dead. And you're like, well, I don't really care anymore. It's like, once they all die, it's like, you can try to replace them, but I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah.
I think the whole main crew is dead now, right? Everybody like from the first season.
Daryl's still there.
Technically Rick, right? And Daryl.
Oh, right, Daryl. Sorry, that's right. Daryl. Mm-hmm. Daryl's
still there. And then maybe one more person.
Rick. That's it.
Rick is still there? I thought he left.
I thought Rick died.
he's not dead because they're making movies.
He just left.
Rick Grimes.
Got it.
I can't with this.
It's wild. It's
all I'm saying. Yeah, man.
All right.
So many people died. died in season three.
Yeah, I actually appreciate that about Inside Man, though. The separate dude that they had to fake out with the death, there was really no, I mean, there's violence, death. But there was like no death. Like, and I'm so glad there was no death towards black people, because I don't know if y'all watched the Underground Railroad, but I've been watching that for the past week and a half. And I was just like, I don't need to see black suffering anymore. Like, I'm so relieved to like watch this movie and not be on edge about what's going to happen to the black people in this movie.
And but that was another thing that made you want to root for Clive Owen, because you were like, before you even know that like the dude was a Nazi and that's what he's trying to steal his money, you know, the money that his blood money, he's trying to steal that, the diamonds, I guess, because he's so like, he's nice to the kid and and they only beat up the guy who tried to hide his phone, and he told him not to hide his phone.
Didn't shoot him, even though he said he was going to kill him.
Yeah, he said he was going to kill him. He said, if you don't give me your phone, I will kill you, you know, and he didn't do it, you know. And so because he was more empty threats in terms of killing people, when he shoots the squib, you know, the fake whatever he is that he shoots, it's intense, but also you're like, he wouldn't do that to me. You know what I mean? Like, as an audience member, you're watching this going, Clive Owen wouldn't do that to me.
I thought it made it more believable because it was like, oh, shoot, he is serious. Like, Denzel misplayed his hand. He called a bluff and then he got somebody killed. But nah, that dude had another bluff up his sleeve, baby.
I love that Denzel's like banging against the window. He's like, hey, what are you doing? <It's> like,
I think it was incredible that he planned so far ahead to go, at some point, I'm going to have to fake kill somebody, because if I don't, they won't believe me.
Yep.
And so let me go do that.
But he also knew, he says that he knows that you can't breach unless I kill someone. You know, they don't authorize breaches unless a hostage has been
that's
killed.
Right.
So like he had that up his sleeve, probably just so that there could be some
that
kind
they
of
would
chaos.
Breach.
Yeah,
right.
That which is like, what was he planning on doing then? You know,
well, because he was listening to the radio. Remember, like the bug that they had, and that's when he knew they were going to do the breach.
Right,
and so
then
he was in a position. Like, he probably had a bunch of different alternate plans depending on how things panned out. I think that's why he admired Denzel's character, because like, oh, you're actually a person that kind of can figure this out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw you a few bones and then also slip you a diamond at the end so you can take care of your...
Can't believe he slipped that dude a diamond.
Quick question about the diamond, because I was watching this with my wife yesterday. She was like, he's going to just give that to his girlfriend, right, as a ring. He's not going to try to cash it. I was like, that's the logical thing to do, because if you know that people are possibly looking for these diamonds, it just makes sense to put it on the ring and just give that to
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And then eventually maybe you could say like, oh...
And that's why he gave it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gave it to him for his girlfriend. That was one of my favorite lines in the movie, where he's like, are you going to marry her? What, you're too old? Nah, it's just too broke. Do you love her? Yeah. Money doesn't matter. Thanks, bank robber. Denzel's like, thanks, bank robber. That was incredible. And also something I 100% would say in real life. If like a bank robber is trying to give me like relationship advice, it's like, yeah, thanks, bank robber. Yeah, I'll take that into
but
consideration.
Also telling you that, but also specifically telling you that money doesn't buy everything while they're inside a bank trying to rob. <It's> like,
the irony. I mean, no, dude, that was... Yeah, this movie was so... It was so fun. Oh, what was the other thing I was going to say? The one thing that did kind of suck about this movie, though, was Denzel's partner, because like she didn't really have much of a character. And then like at the end, she's just like waiting for him, like in the bed, like with lingerie, and is like,
yeah,
where are those handcuffs? And I was like, okay.
Why was he living in the set of a Mo Betta Blues? why does it just go back to the 80s?
Well, that's the thing. That's the one thing that it has going for it, because it is just problematic to think about like the rendering of this character. But the only thing it has going for it is that it is almost like it's like every time we see her, jazz music is playing underneath, you know, and it's like it's homage to that. Like, you know, he's the grizzled cop and that's his dime piece waiting for him at home. But you know what I mean? Like, it just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. That wasn't in it enough for it to sour any of the experience of watching this. And this is like a 2.5 hour movie, too. Like, this isn't, you know, a short walk in the park. This is, you have to invest some time. And I remember like finishing it, I was like, damn, like, this is really good. Like, I kind of want to watch it again, but
yeah. This was such a great movie to see in the movie theaters, and like it was just an awesome blockbuster. And it was rated R, so like they, you know, he made a lot of money for an R-rated film, which, you know,
surprisingly,
not that the box office means anything anymore, but it was back in the day when there was a box office. Like, it was hard. It was hard to...
Oh, and we didn't talk about this too. The speaking of it being rated R is what made me think of this, and him having the budget that he had, right? The movie is kind of, it moves slow, and there's, you know, there's this big sort of mystery element to it, but then they just do this like insanely high octane, like imagination, reenactments of like what would happen if they do a breach, and we just see like people all getting mowed down by machine guns, blood everywhere. Like, it's so crazy. Like, it comes out of nowhere. We're a good hour 40 maybe into the end of the movie, and they're just like, all right, here's 10 like, minutes of
here's what you want to see.
Yeah.
Here's that, like, you know, people are like, well, I'm seeing a bank robbing movie, I want to see people get blown away. It's like, we'll do that. You could put it in the trailer. It's not this movie.
Right.
It's not a part of the story.
And then at the end, they cut back to Willem Dafoe and his squad, and they're like, one dude's like, we should probably just use rubber bullets since we don't know who's who. He's like, yeah, you're right. It's like, but okay.
We're going to say the same thing, that they should dress up as painters themselves. It was like, so you want everyone to get a shot?
Well, the thing I was going to say was, he was like,
niggas get shot every day, B.
We should use rubber bullets and knock them out.
Yeah, do headshots.
You have to do headshots. That could cause brain damage to some people.
Here's the thing. Rubber bullets can do serious damage, and people like lose eyes. because they get hit with the rubber bullet. Like, so if you're aiming for the head, you're 100% going to knock out someone's eye.
Yeah. Have y'all ever been shot in the head with a paintball? That's just not fun. That's not a paintball.
That sounds awful.
I don't even want to imagine it.
Don't go to Florida, man. There's a paintball range I went to. A family friend took me and he was like, oh yeah, we're going to start off in this place called Iraq. And I was like, why is it called Iraq? And it's just a bunch of brick walls and then it's really tight corners and motherfuckers just mow you down with paintball.
Oh my God. But yeah, it seems like everybody get, I mean, like Clive Owen gets away. There was that moment when they come back and they're like, oh, the cops are coming inside. Clive Owen's character so confident that his plan will work that he literally not only walks past them out the door but bumps into him to give him a diamond. That's like,
and talks,
dude,
and says, and says excuse me too, like, so it's like he's got a distinctive voice, right?
So right, I think so.
That was very risky.
Very risky. Did it anyway.
Someone after I'd seen this was like walking through, like, I don't remember who it was, a friend of mine at the time was like walking through like the little hints we got to what was going to be going on with Clive Owen. And one of the very obvious ones is after they dig the hole, the dude who they dragged out and punched is like, that's one hell of a shitter. And like, it just, that just was his, where he has been going to the bathroom, like right. in that hole. And like, I fully didn't clock it. Like even when he said that, I was still thinking like, I guess that's the tunnel they're digging to get out. Like, it was still
James, not gonna lie, didn't clock it after watching it twice until you just said it right now. I literally was like, oh, I thought that, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that they dug a hole in the ground. I thought that was something else.
Yeah. I mean, and they even say there are no tunnels to get out, but we saw them digging a tunnel the whole movie. Like,
right.
What's going to happen though when that bank eventually discovers this fake wall behind like the maintenance room and then a hole full of shit? Like, that's going to be so confusing.
Well, they'll probably be like, what is that smell? And they'll think it's a dead rat and like, of like some, but honestly, it would take them so long. Yeah. I loved that when they came into that room with those Dell boxes, Clive Owen was like, beautiful. I was like, what?
I mean, to be able to do all that, like, I mean, yeah, they definitely had to have someone who worked at the bank because there's no way you could just like assume that the stuff would be available, you know? And that's what's so brilliant about the plan.
Yeah. Like, such a good movie. I mean, is there anything left to say?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the one other thing I just want to say about the pacing that I loved was that like so much of the beginning was just like, we'll call him later. Like, so much of the beginning was just like casually.
Now let's
like,
go eat at a diner.
I loved that. And you said how well it captured New York. Like the scene where Christopher Plummer and Jodie Foster are like walking along the river. Like all of that is so. It made me miss New York, you know, and the acting was so strong.
Come on back to New York.
I know I should. But but in so many of the actors I noticed from like theater, like it was just like, man, I'm this whole thing is really making me nostalgic.
Yeah, I just love the dialogue. I mean, like when Clive Owen and Denzel are going head to head and Clive Owen's like confidently, you know, like in a week or so, I'm going to be on a beach sipping on a pina colada. He's like, no, you're going to be in jail with Jesus and Jamal. And I think you're sucking on this out of pina colada. So good.
That line, incredible.
It's so funny. I'm like, oh, this has got a good balance of humor, suspense, action to a certain extent. I was like,
it's also one of those movies that I like watching. I'm like, this is why I want to be in movies. Like, it just feels so cool. Even just them walking down to the diner and then Denzel being like, get that for me, boss. And like, they like lift up the police tape and they're just like walking like under the police tape. Just that shot alone, I was like, this is so cool. Everybody in this movie is cool. Like, this is awesome. Like, wow, it would be so cool to like just be one of those people who are just like, I'm not taking off my clothes, you know? Like, just all of it. Just Just everything about it is so awesome. Could you imagine just getting to do a scene with Denzel and he's interrogating you? I love the interrogations. Them just being like, "You didn't rob this. You didn't rob it, right? Yeah. No. You sure? All right. No, you can't. No, you could leave. I'm just kidding. No, you have to stay. No, yeah, you can go. You can go. Okay.
I read that those interrogation scenes were kind of mostly improv, which makes a lot of sense. That's why it felt like really natural. I think the way that Spike, you know, had the sepia tone with those scenes too, this movie is so brilliant in the way that Spike Lee did it, because it's not like the usual, like, insane over the head, like, I'm gonna beat you with the theme, Spike Lee. It's like, you just see certain, like, artistic choices that you're like, that's Spike Lee. And that's like why I appreciate him so much. It's like, he has such a distinct style. You can always be like, this is a Spike Lee movie. And very few directors have that kind of flavor to the films that they make.
This movie really holds up. It's really fun. I don't even know. What would Jurassic say to Hollywood? What would we? Oh,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there aren't enough movies like this. He would say something like that, you know? Like, I mean, even though we didn't talk about this either. The Sikh, the scene where the guy is pushed out and they like take off his turban, and like he's so adamant about getting his turban. But like especially this was 2006, and you know, and we get that shot of Denzel and I think it's Jodie Foster in that scene in front of the mural that says "Never Forget" and everything. Like, there was a lot that was in the air, and obviously for someone like that character who was a Sikh and you know, is dealing with all kinds of oppression from all different sides. Right. Like, even just the fact that they put that in and had us like sit with it for the amount of time that we did, you know, was like really great, you know? And so like, I just think that like Gerard would probably say, you know, there needs to be more movies about taking down Nazis and talking about oppression and people where a black cop is just a black cop and he's good at what he does and people are shitting on him. But he knows that he's better than that. Something like that. Probably.
Ah, I liked what you did there, James. That was very nice. There's definitely some collateral beauty in that.
Wow. I don't know if I should call this a win or...
I wouldn't.
I took it back. I do the transition.
Reclaim it.
I do. King Kong ain't got no... Oh, wait. What am I doing?
I just, you know, Brandon, what do you think about Collateral Beauty? Have you seen that movie?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So my co-host from Media Popcorn and I actually saw an opening weekend.
Because
a film critic fan of ours is like, guys, I saw an advanced screening. I need you to see this and do a review ASAP. So we went to the Magic Johnson Harlem Theater and we watched like a matinee show. And we were honestly thinking about like stabbing ourselves afterwards. We're like, this is so bad. And the plot twist was so insane.
I would have loved to have seen Collateral Beauty in a movie theater with a black crowd. I would have loved to have seen
that. Yeah.
It's one of the most bizarre, because it has, you know, it wasn't that Edward Norton, Will Smith, Kate Winslet, a great cast. And then you have these magic, like these weird people that they try to make Will Smith think that he made up, but they're actually real actors.
But then also maybe they are angels. they do that weird thing where they're like, but maybe they are. There's a reveal that they're not angels. And then there's one more that's like, but maybe they are. And you're like, what?
And then you're like, wait, so Kate Winslet just went to the Bronx to give this little black kid money who may not exist? What happened in this movie?
This movie is bizarre. Okay, it's time for the cause. We rate review films not based on how much we like them, but whether or not they help the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood. Okay? So if the film fully helps the cause, we give it a black fist. If it only somewhat helps the cause, we give it a white palm. If the movie doesn't help the cause at all, we don't give it anything.
Okay.
So on the count of three, I'm going to give our ratings for the cause. Here we go. One. Two, three.
Pow! There it is!
Three black fists!
Three black fists!
Yeah, man. This movie helped Spike. Denzel was already popping, but this movie helped Chiwetel. I mean, my man got an Oscar nomination not what, I guess it was 6 years after this, but
but that's quick.
Hey man, he worked his way up.
How many black people have Oscar nominations?
Yeah, 6 years best after a movie?
Okay.
Yeah. Come on now.
Without Inside Man, we don't get Widows.
Without right?
Inside yeah. Man, we don't get Training Day, even though it came out
way before
it came out before this movie. But that's
the thing about Denzel had his career planned out so much. He knew I'm going to do Training Day because I got Inside Man coming in 5 years. See, I told y'all, stay woke, y'all. You got to think.
Yeah, maybe without this, we don't get Black Klansman. I don't know.
We definitely
maybe they don't,
give,
you know?
It's a house of cards. It's a delicate house of cards. One thing leads to the next, lead to the next.
Brandon, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, guys. This is
brother.
A lot of fun.
This was so much fun. Where can people find you online? Anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, folks, y'all can find me at American Collins on all social media platforms. My website is americancollins.com. You can follow my show, Medium Popcorn, on all podcast players, or go to mediumpopcorn.com. And then Drunk Black History. If you were in the New York area, actually, if you're anywhere, we have drunkblackhistory.com. We're celebrating Juneteenth on Saturday, June 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You can get tickets to join us in person, or you can join the live stream. It's going to be dope. Have an incredible lineup. We got the Lucas Brothers, Oscar nominees for
Juneteenth.
We got Marie Faustine, who's been on MTV. It's going to be amazing. So, yeah, thanks again for having me, guys.
Amazing. That's so dope. Hustle just to see people in real life again is...
It's gonna be weird, man. It's gonna be really weird, but I'm really excited about it.
That's awesome. If you can follow us at Black Men Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. BlackMenPodcast.com is our website. We got links to merchandise, also a defunct Patreon. We don't have new episodes, but there's a year's worth of episodes on there. So if you haven't done it, you know, check that out. If you rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes, we'll read your review on the air. This is by Comp My Drink. Just a Sunset Park 1996 film with Terrence Howard and Freddie Starr. All right. They didn't say anything about it, but I'm assuming they want us to review that movie, and I respect it.
That movie is wild. Y'all haven't done that yet?
We haven't done that yet. No. Nope.
Rhea Pro. Ooh, that's going to... I would love to hear that episode.
Yeah, you can follow me at John Braylock. You can follow Jarrah at Jarrah Milligan. And I know James is James Third Comedy.
Third is 3RD.
There he is.
Third is 3RD.
Okay. You don't need to repeat it.
Just so that people know.
Yeah, we understand.
All right.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Produced by Melissa D. Montz. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.
Forever Dog.
What's up, Black Men Can't Jump comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!